This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community. Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
And you're listening to Saturday Magazine with Harriet Ching and myself, Tass. We're having a nice time so far, aren't we, Harriet?
Oh, we are. And the rain's coming down outside, which is wonderful for Melbourne. Not so great for Townsville, but we're doing very well getting a bit of rain down here
in
Victoria.
I hate it when it rains during the day.
Well, I'm the pluviophile who's set to square the ledger a bit if you don't like it.
I wish it would rain all night.
Really?
Yeah, but
you belong in the tropics, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so we've got our next guest in the studio. Would you like to introduce him?
I would absolutely love to introduce him. Martin Foley, who has been the most incredible trailblazer, and I say that without the fact that he's sitting next to me and he's also my boss, as Australia's first equality minister, having absolutely paved the way in a series of landmark initiatives, as well as being the Minister for Mental Health, and again, another landmark initiative that we talked about earlier, the Royal Commission into Mental Health. Minister Martin Foley, it is an absolute delight to welcome you back to the studio as a regular. You're always a wonderful guest to have here, and today is no exception. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Harriet, and Taz, and Joysters. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you back in the studio, Martin.
My pleasure.
So you've started the year off with a complete bang, haven't you?
Yes.
Last week, here we were at Pride March, and you made this amazing announcement that you're going to make conversion therapy illegal in Victoria.
We are, and we use the word therapy with the note that this is not therapeutic. Mm. This is dangerous, bigoted quackery. And there is no need to fix broken LGBTI Victorians. There is a need to celebrate LGBTI Victorians. But this insidious practice is out there. The former Minister for Health, Jill Hennessy, commissioned the Health Complaints Commissioner last year to conduct an investigation into so-called conversion therapy. That report was handed to the new Minister, Jenny Markakos, in December. It's pretty harrowing reading. It's tough stuff.
Is it publicly available, Martin?
A summary is about to be released by the Health Complaints Commissioner. Many people came forward with the condition of confidentiality, and we will respect that. And more importantly, we will be acting on the key recommendations about making a very strong public and legislative statement of condemning and calling out this practice, as well as making it an illegal practice.
So what does illegal mean?
So the truth is that every reputable medical, psychological, mental health organisation in not only the country but mostly in the world have condemned so-called conversion therapy, pray the gay away, anti-gay ideology, whatever name it might go by, as dangerous. And this report highlights that. But it also highlights the fringe nature in which this activity seeks to clothe itself and, frankly, hide itself, particularly in faith-based communities. And a simple legislative ban, whether it be just a criminalisation of the activity, has been shown to be ineffective. So what we need is a sophisticated mix of criminality, civil penalties, education, support. And this is not just the Health Complaints Commissioner talking about this. The Human Rights Law Centre and La Trobe University did a excellent report into conversion therapy last year around the globe. many other states of the United States. I think it's some 14 states, Canada. Even the Conservative government in the UK is looking at heading down this path.
It's interesting. We do still have a really significant level of support for this vile and humiliating practice that exists. Even the Vice President of the United States of America has been on the record supporting conversion, inverted commas, therapy. One of the questions that has come up is the extent to which a ban might push these practices underground best to actually counter that. You've talked about a mix of solutions. What's the proposal around addressing those concerns?
That's a very good question, Harriet.
So we will engage in a quite a lengthy process with LGBTI community leaders, faith-based communities who want to, and many faith-based communities are pretty good on this, not all, but many, particularly LGBTI faith communities, legal experts, and our existing whole of government advisory groups, the Justice LGBTI Working Group, to get the right mix. And we'll spend most of this year getting that right. Civil penalties, legal penalties, educative processes, and to make sure that we get the message out there that we will be legislating in this space.
So it's actually quite a package of initiatives. It's not just saying, you know, you do this and you'll end up in jail. It's actually putting in place a whole program of activities to really try to re-educate the community about the ineffectiveness of this
more than ineffectiveness,
therapy.
At least ineffectiveness and more probable dangerous
destruction.
Dangerous activity that calls itself so-called conversion therapy.
Now, by the way, a little bit later in the show, we've got Anthony Venn Brown coming into the studio, who was a pastor, a preacher, who actually advocated conversion therapy and came out. Mm. He's going to come and talk about his experience and his story of conversion therapy.
It's a remarkable story.
And just on the flip side of that, one of the parts of the Andrews government's package for LGBTIQ people and their families across Victoria is that additional mental health support. How does that sit alongside what we're trying to do to crack down on any last remnant that this is acceptable as conversion therapy on the one hand, whilst also encouraging better acceptance and I suppose cohesion within family units for people who are either coming out or who are LGBTIQA+ and don't quite know how to work that into their lives?
That's part of the package. We need to make sure that if we're going to encourage an educative purpose, if we're going to encourage a combination of criminal and legal and civil responses, we have to encourage people to step forward. And every piece of work, the Health Complaints Commissioner's work, community work, shows that people are reluctant to come forward. They're reluctant to come forward because it's painful, and it raises all sorts of trauma for people. And if we're going to deal with it, we have to deal with that trauma.
Just on that point, have we got a number that people might wish to call if they do need any assistance in relation to this issue? There is always Lifeline and Switchboard as well. We would encourage people to get in touch, 13 11 14, if you do wish to talk about any issues that this may
have
raised for
you. You know that number off by heart.
Well, it's one which particularly in various subject matters like mental health and also the LGBTIQA+ space, unfortunately, we have needed so much help to talk about issues that bring up enormous pain and enormous distress. We all remember these numbers, I think, from the postal survey or from the historical convictions apology. Yeah.
Martin, what's the response been like? Certainly our community has responded well, but beyond our community?
Overwhelming support. We've seen the social media posts for the Premier on this be his most successful social media post.
Truly?
Yes.
Mm. Wow.
It's gone completely berserk. But messages of support from faith-based communities, from the mental health professionals, and just from ordinary Victorians has been, this exists? How on earth in a civilised progressive community in the 21st century does this quackery be allowed to happen?
Now, dare I ask you, what's been the opposition's reaction to this?
Well, I don't pretend to speak for the Liberal Party. They seem to be in some existential angst on a range of issues when it comes to the LGBTI community. But I did note with some optimism the comments by the opposition spokesperson that in principle they were opposed to so-called gay conversion therapy, but they were withholding their position until they saw the legislation.
That's not an unreasonable position, really, is it?
I know, but we've seen their track form in the last parliament when their votes sunk a whole range of reforms to the Equal Opportunity Act and to birth certificates.
This is a trans birth certificates,
yeah, of particularly.
Course.
And again, hearing members of the Liberal Party now talk about having been at the Midsummer Pride March and being equality spokespeople is more than a little rich when I've heard them and looked at them and watched them stand in our parliament and say, well, you know what, LGBTIQ people don't deserve fundamentally the same rights as everybody else, and we can say that because that's just politics. It's not good enough, and I think that people are well and truly sick of that sort of politics, so I would hope that they can evolve.
So, Martin, do you have the numbers in the upper house to get this through?
Well, we never take any votes in the Legislative Council for granted, but as a result of the pretty strong vote of support in the last state election for the Andrews Labor government and our progressive agenda for the future of this state, we've certainly managed to narrow the gap that we need for a majority in the Legislative Council. And we're hopeful that we'll be able to get this package through. We'll make sure that as part of that consultation, we engage with the crossbenchers to make sure that they understand the nature of the harm that so-called gay conversion therapy enforces on communities right around the state, and the process by which we will get the right mix of civil, legal, community and educative support. So we're hopeful we'll get this package through.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing. I saw you marching at Pride March last week.
I saw you too.
There was quite a large contingency of people from the Labor Party I saw.
Despite the heat, yes.
And a number of ministers.
Yes.
If I recall correctly, at least four or five ministers.
Yes.
And federal members as well. It was great to see a number of our federal
Lots of parliamentary secretaries I saw.
I was actually up the back. So
I saw you. I saw you,
the
Harry.
Back and just decided I was going to high-five every young person and pat every dog that I walked past. So I just fell further and further behind and then got to talking and randomly hugging people. So it was such a joyous day. It was blisteringly hot. And much love to those who couldn't come to Midsummer Pride. But
why? Because they got too hot?
Because it was really hot. And so for particularly for some of the kids, so rainbow families.
Call me old-fashioned, Harriet. I don't think that's an excuse. I'm sorry.
This is because you're Mediterranean. And you're 35
there
years
were
old.
800 minus 18 young people marching.
It was spectacular.
There were 100 kids from St Kilda Primary School.
And Scouts had a huge
There were
turnout.
The older lesbian groups.
I hung out with them too. They said, you're almost ready to join us. And
there
I
were
said,
Matrix...
Yes.
Got a long way to go. Matrix Guild were there. There were lots. So, I mean, honestly, for people to say it's too hot to march, for organisations to say it's too hot to march, I don't think that's excusable.
I'm
happy to have this debate.
Organisations
and
do
I'm
have a duty
name
of
them.
Care.
Of course they do. Of course they do. But nobody forces anybody to march. It's purely voluntary.
Can I just have a point here about individuals who didn't march? Rainbow families were not able to attend in the numbers they usually do. I completely respect that. There were a lot of
I get that. Some of them
being
have,
out in
have
the sun,
tiny kids, and
down,
I get that.
Walking down that road.
But THH, switchboard.
Yep. Yeah, but there were people who, you know, who volunteer or are active members of those organisations who turned out nonetheless, and it was wonderful to see them there. But again, for the young people and the people who couldn't be there for health related reasons, our love was with you on the day. So again, I think it's important that people know that they were missed and respected, but also again that we keep the work going because there is still a great need for us to have Midsummer Pride and for it to continue
I haven't seen the numbers on Midsummer Pride, Harriet, but I reckon it was one of the largest parades I've seen, actually.
It certainly seemed packed.
It just went on. It was solid 2 hours of people marching. Some of the largest groups I've ever seen.
And the fire trucks and ambulance, you know, again, seeing our emergency services workers there. Whilst
teachers were there.
Parts of the state were burning and they were there, you know, in force. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it just, you know, all these people turned up in full swing. A lot of non-queer groups turned up.
Absolutely.
In support, allies supporting.
Allies are
amazing. Fantastic, fantastic.
What are the numbers like overall?
Well, the numbers overall were pretty amazing. Midsummer actually had a total of 285,000 people attend an event of some sort. There are 179 shows. There were 5,000 people involved in supporting and making the whole carnival work, or the whole festival work. And actually, I do have some figures here on the march. There were 4,600 people. 46,000 people
attending.
I was thinking I'd stood there with 4,600 just at the start.
Really?
46,000 is a massive number.
Wow. And 7,000 people marching. Wow. I thought I was reading something incorrectly. There you go. It's great, great figures. Hey, we've also had some comments. 317 says they're enjoying the show. Thank you very much, 317. 317, for those of you who don't know, is one of our loyal listeners.
Hello, 317. It's lovely to hear from
you. We know nothing about 317 except that they like a lot of what we talk about.
Exactly. I think 317 lives in my neck of the woods.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How do you know?
Well, 317, text us back in again. If I recall you being the same person who texted last time, you may be based in either Bunyip or Druin.
Oh, I think 317 lives in St Kilda East.
Oh, well, maybe 317's been to Bunyip or Druin. Okay, well, maybe we're thinking of a different person. Hello and much love to you, whoever you are. I hope you're having a gorgeous Saturday morning.
So, Martin, tell us, what have you got planned for our community this year?
Well, again, it's all about partnership and collaboration. And our plan that we both took to the election in 2018...
Which you announced here in this very studio, actually.
We did indeed. And we fully intend to deliver on every one of those commitments, which include the delivery of Melbourne Pride in 2021 to mark the 40th anniversary of the decriminalisation of homosexuality.
I forgot all about that one. That's going to be a big event, isn't it?
It's going to be extraordinary.
Yes, it is. And we look forward to it being delivered in partnership with and cooperation with Midsummer, so as to make sure that the very growth and enthusiasm around queer cultural activities that have been so well supported this year, and I'm sure next, will continue on in 2021. We also want to build on the great work that's been done in the first term around celebratory activities. So we've got an extra $200,000 to build onto our already existing Pride events and festivals. That will be a strong focus on regional Victoria.
Hear, hear. Big thumbs up from regional communities.
Fantastic.
Yeah, wonderful.
We are well and truly convinced by the housing and homelessness organisations that LGBTI youth are horrendously overrepresented in homelessness. So there'll be a $3 million dedicated fund in partnership with homelessness organisations to concentrate on LGBTI youth homelessness in particular.
So have you worked out how that one's going to work, or is that still something to be thought through?
We're working through that as we speak. We've been in consultation with housing groups, but essentially the Minister for Housing, the good friend of the community, Richard Wynne.
Richard Wynne, of course.
Will be leading that program, and there'll be a kind of a there'll be a request for housing organisations to partner with LGBTI housing and other organisations, community organisations, to come up with what are we going to do for the best outcome for that $3 million, and how can we leverage greater outcomes from it.
So you won't be building new housing, I presume.
Well, we may well. Let's see what comes back. There's a lot of activity out there in social housing partners. And we need to do more, without doubt. We're facing a housing crisis more generally, particularly around homelessness. But the pointy end of that crisis is particularly LGBTI young people.
So we won't go into the whole homelessness thing because that's a whole topic in itself.
We'll just need to get you back for another discussion with your colleague.
And I think we should do that because there's no doubt it is an ongoing issue.
And there's also increased support for mental health support for LGBTI communities. But it would be remiss of me not to restate the commitment the Premier made for $800,000 towards supporting the operation and relocation
of
Joy radio station.
Yes, that was very well received. Very, very well received.
But on top of that, it's all about delivering and embedding the respect, celebration and acceptance that equality for LGBTI communities in terms of outcomes won't be achieved until it's embedded in the day-to-day operation of the government and its agencies and through that into our community.
It's so refreshing. So refreshing to hear that we've moved beyond tolerance.
Oh, I hate
tolerating LGBTI people or accepting LGBTI
people.
All
these tokens sort
and
of.
And now we're actually
servicing.
Here to celebrate that we actually exist and are part of this community. And
you can participate. Tolerate a stubbed toe.
Stubbed toe.
You celebrate diversity, richness, and inclusion for its own worth, but actually it makes the whole community stronger.
Now, Martin, tell us about what legislation you have planned, because there's been a few attempts to fix up the birth certificate issue for our trans brothers and sisters, and it got beaten down in Parliament by the opposition.
One vote.
So can that be sorted out?
We've committed to bring that legislation back. This is unfinished business. Our trans community, particularly trans young people, have been thrown under the cultural wars bus for too long. This is a sensible, necessary, and can I say across the world, widely accepted set of arrangements that gives LGBTI, particularly trans people, the opportunity to identify through their critical legal documents. Their identity needs to be reflected in the legal basis of how society treats them.
So this legislation will come back into Parliament?
We've committed to do that, and the Attorney-General is a very strong supporter of that plan.
It'll be interesting to see how that debate pans out. We've gone from having 14 Labor members in the upper house to 18, so that then requires an additional 3 votes to get legislation through. Since the last vote was defeated, the work has gone on. I know that people like Sally Goldner and Brenda Appleton, both of whom were recognised in recent Australia Day honours. And congratulations
and
to
so.
Both of you, if you are listening, and to everyone else who's loved and supported and relied upon them in the past. They were absolutely driving forces behind that. They've continued that work, and there's a great groundswell around needing to finish off what you've rightly referred to, Martin, as unfinished business. There's other work that I think will also continue through the justice task forces and to continue with that positive engagement on acceptance and respect. What role will you continue to have as part of that work alongside people like the attorney?
So as the Minister for Equality, the whole strategy is built around delivering those election commitments, but in doing so to embed the whole notion that every piece of what government does needs to reflect an LGBTI lens. So we keep looking for where the discrimination, where the opportunities that deliberately or inadvertently exclude LGBTI communities, and just make sure that every piece of what government embeds in its daily activities has an LGBTI equality focus to it.
That's fantastic.
If we had a big round of applause sound effect that we could put in right now, we would. But you should consider it to be virtual rather than literal. It's one of those absolutely groundbreaking things which, in hindsight, people will say, well, why wasn't it done earlier? The fact that we are able to do it now despite ongoing opposition is something that's in fact making a real and positive and practical difference to people's lives from the top down as well as from a community and grassroots level up.
So I think that is an absolutely amazing thing, Martin. So what you're saying is that every single policy initiative to be rolled out by government will go through a LGBTI lens.
Indeed. And the whole focus, the key focus, the joining point of all our activity is to make sure that we have a whole of government embedding of LGBTI support, practice, funding, all of those things locked in. But the key strategy led by the whole of government advisory group, which I still co-chair with Brenda Appleton, will have the main task of that strategy landing over the next 4 years.
Well, congratulations, that's all I could say. I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Thanks,
I mean, what a long way we have come.
We have come so far, haven't we?
It's extraordinary.
And off the back of all of that work from people, you know, decades and generations ago, and it's such an important thing, even at Pride and at Carnival, to be able to think back to the contributions of so many people, you know, many of whom aren't here anymore.
It's extraordinary. It's extraordinary.
Who've made these things possible. This is real social progress, and this civil rights focus is something we should never, ever forget, because so much of it has gone on quietly and behind the scenes.
But I'll issue one note of caution. As we've seen around the world, this is not one-way traffic. Progress is contested. And we've seen around the world what can happen if community focus does not stay on the whole notion that a rights framework, that a approach that says diversity, inclusion of LGBTI communities is a right. What happens when that starts to be wound back?
Yes, and that can happen, and we've seen many examples of that occur around the world. So what's your advice about how we might prevent that from occurring? What do we need to do?
Organise, organise, organise.
But it's also about taking your opposition with you to some degree, isn't it?
And through organising, change community attitudes, and in the famous words of Jim Hacker from Yes Prime Minister, I am my community's, I am my people's leader, I will follow them wherever they go. And we need to make sure that community drives this process of change.
And vigilance at every level, yeah.
And the political class will fall in behind that.
But of course, as we're speaking, there are people out there who are organising against all
there
of
are.
These rights.
There are.
So what do you do about that?
You take them on respectfully and in a appropriate manner, not playing their trick of falling for the cultural wars bus, but you organise and you appeal to the best values of a community that you know. It makes sure that LGBTI Victorians have their voice heard, because guess what? LGBTI Victorians are everywhere and are in every community and in every political party and in every church and in every school, and need to be reflected, celebrated and supported.
Despite the opposition on things like safe schools, which was a very loud and vocal minority in the lead-up to the election, you must be fortified by the result, which was an endorsement of our equality framework.
Indeed I am. If anything, I would hope that the election result sends a clear message that can we stop using particularly trans kids and safe schools as political clickbait. Surely that message has been received on the back of the resounding endorsement that the Victorian government received, particularly in that space.
Martin, we've had a message from another one of our regular listeners, the gorgeous Melina. Melina says a whole range of things. She saw you at the VAC, well, it's actually no longer the VAC hypothetical, it's the TTH hypothetical. But she does say thank you so much for your work, Martin Foley. So I suppose, you know, our feedback suggests that there are people who are acknowledging the work that you're doing, the leadership that you're providing through government to ensure that our equality, our rights...
There's still so much
considered.
More to do. Yes, let's look back, and we stand on the shoulders of giants, all of us, from many, many years of hard work by community leaders. But the more that we do, the more there still is to do.
And 317, who, you know, is our regular number one listener, but also a critique, does actually say, Mr. Foley, you restore my faith in politics despite all the scandals in our federal parliament.
Thank you. Mr. Foley was my dad. I'm Martin.
What a lovely message, though, to have. And also thanks to Melina as well. It's great to have listeners engaging with Saturday Mag and to actually get you in touch with us as we continue to discuss the big issues. It's really wonderful to see that our communities are so prepared now, more prepared than ever, to get in touch and to have a chat and to have their say. One of the things that we have tried to do is that ongoing consultation and that involvement. And Martin, it's been wonderful to see you spearheading it along with people like Roe Allen in the commissioner role.
And reaching right across the state. I mean, I'm reminded because we've had another message from Tim from Castlemaine who says, reminds us that Chill Out is coming up in a few weeks' time.
Yes.
But that's to say that we've got people who actually do live in the country who do actually participate in all of these activities.
And of course, hot on the heels of Chill Out is the wonderful biannual Castlemaine State Festival, which also this year has a very strong queer creative element to it. So
there you go. I didn't know about that one.
Get on the website, Tim, and the other supporters in Castlemaine, and support your local.
It's not just about Chill Out, Tim. So
there's a whole calendar that awaits you, Tim. If you bounce off Chill Out, you can have a whole year of busy ones.
Well, I was chatting with somebody at the theatre the other night. I don't often go to the theatre, but I went to see Christos Tsolkas's
Merciless Gods, is it?
Yeah, very, very, very angry piece of theatre. Yes. But it's a bit like all of his work, really, isn't it? Nevertheless, I sat next to somebody from the Writers' Festival.
It's not Enya, that's for sure.
No, it's not. It's not. It's certainly not Light.
No.
If you go there for entertainment, you're not going to get entertained. But the person from the Writers' Festival actually went to a lot of trouble to tell me that they have a huge queer stream within their program of activities as well. So, look, you know, we're here, we're queer, we're everywhere, really, aren't we?
Thanks for being everywhere with us, Martin Foley.
Well, my great honour and privilege. Thanks, Joysters.
Thank you for coming into the studio. Have a great year, and we look forward to having you back in the studio many more times.
I look forward to it.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.